This conference is now being recorded. Please take a head. Lines are open.
Thank you. Well, good morning or afternoon or evening, wherever you might be, and welcome to this February 4th call of the Zone File Access Advisory Group. Rod, as some of you may have heard a few moments ago, Rod is still trying to clear customs on his return to the States, so he'll probably join us late. We do have Vladimir on the line, and what I'll do is jump right into the agenda, and then we'll get started. So starting with roll call, what I'm going to do is call the folks out by name who are signed into the conference bridge, and that's how we'll know who's with us. We've got Mikey O'Connor, we've got John Christoff, we've got Joe St. Sauve, we've got Mark McFadden, we've got Francisco Arias, we've got David Piscatello, John McCormick, Tatiana, Barry Cobb, Jonathan Frakes, and Vladimir. Is there anyone perhaps who's sharing a phone line this morning that I didn't call by name? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move forward.
Okay. Craig, do you mind reviewing the action items?
Yeah, that's why I was going to do that now. So the review of the open action items, which is on page 2 of the agenda. The first was for Mark to revise Vladimir's spreadsheets and incorporating the comments that came out of last week's discussion on the various models. And as Mark has noted in the status, it's been incorporated to the draft of the concept paper, which we'll get to a little bit later in the agenda. The second item, Rod, with Mark's assistance, will circulate a redline version of the concept paper before the next call. And I wrote the status here as overtaken by events. What we're actually going to do is Mark has prepared a new draft of the concept paper that he used Rod's initial paper as the basis for, and we'll get into a discussion of this concept paper again during today's call. And Mark will lead a session on what some of the highlights are and the steps forward. The third open action item was that Mikey O'Connor was going to circulate draft materials regarding cost to consumers, and that was done, and Mikey will lead us through that during the second item on today's agenda. Fourth item was that Vladimir was going to circulate a revised problem statement augmented with the comments from last week's call, which he did. It's been on the list now for nearly a week. And it seemed like on last week's call there was agreement that the couple of changes that were made were appropriate and acceptable. And if there's no further comment on that and there's not a dedicated agenda item for it today, it just didn't really seem to be necessary, I'd like to go ahead and post that problem statement to the webpage, the ZFA information webpage. So are there any additional comments on the problem statement? Hearing none, I'll get that posted sometime today. The fifth item regards the MP3s from the meetings, and those are all now available on the ZFA information webpage. Item number 6 relates to the discussion that we had last week about legal considerations of a three-party zone file access agreement as well as the discussion point we've now had on a couple of calls about the implications for potential changes to that and what the GNSO's role, if any, might be. I sent a series of questions on to ICANN's legal counsel, which this group has seen, and Dan Halloran and Ken Hsu. Ken is one of our counselors located in our Sydney office, have committed to getting us a general high-level response to those questions sometime next week so we can have a discussion about them at our call on 11 February. Item number 7 relates to the workshop that we'll do in Nairobi, and I am handling logistics on that in terms of getting us getting us a 90-minute working session in Nairobi. There obviously will be remote participation available, both by Adobe Connect and Conference Bridge. And if we need other resources, we can arrange for those as well. I had a discussion with Kurt Pritz about this, and his feeling is that, or his counsel to us, or input was that we ought to make this a working session that is open to the community, where not only do we conduct our normal business that day, but that we start with a bit of background on how the group came to be and what the group is chartered with doing, and then to review the progress to date. So it'll be half information sharing and half working session. I think it's a great way to get this concept and the various models socialized with community and to get some good feedback. So to that end, if you would independently email me to let me know if you plan to be in Nairobi. I know some folks have already told me that they are, but for those that have not said anything yet, if you just shoot me an email, that would be great. Item number 8 was for me to post any feedback that we've received from Affiliates VeriSign and Neustar regarding the questions that we posed and specifically the cost elements. We've got some information from Neustar, and there's already been some discussion on the list about that, which I think has been beneficial. I don't have a response from a broader response yet from Affiliates to post. Brian Cute mentioned to me last night via email that he would circulate something today, and I did send something along to the group based upon my discussion with VeriSign. I don't have further cost information from them, so as that information becomes available, if it is, I will circulate it to the group. And then the last open action item was the discussion last week about the network solution or the House Judiciary Committee hearings on the intellectual property rights of two registry operators, or at least at that time network solutions, in domain name registration data. I circulated some information that Rick Wilhelm emailed to me. I haven't heard anything from Ken. I will follow up with him. And I've also got our in-house research team looking for some information on this. I don't necessarily think that we're going to find anything other than what I previously circulated, and that is zone file access because of the public nature of the DNS and the information from the DNS is in the zone, is something that Network Solutions provided prior to the formation of ICANN, and it was something that the continuation of the availability of zone file data was something that was negotiated into the very original ComNet and Org registry agreements, and it's continued to be a part of those agreements. This is the same information I shared on last week's call, I don't know that we're going to get any additional information on the history of zone file access, so I'd actually like to consider that item complete, and if folks have further questions, we can handle that on the list. So I think those were all the open action items. And are there any questions specific to any of those items before we move on to the next item in the agenda? Okay, seeing none. The item 2 in the agenda, the ZFA cost model, and we've dedicated 30 minutes to this session. This is where Mikey O'Connor is going to take over for a while in terms of the information that the subgroup of this group pulled together around consumer cost information. And I believe that Mikey is also going to share a file via Adobe. So, Mikey, I'd like to turn it over to you, unless Vladimir has any opening comments that he'd like to make as the group co-chair who's on today's call.
So I'm looking forward to seeing Mikey's presentation.
Hey, Mikey, the floor is yours.
Okay, thanks, Craig. Just before I get started, can people hear me okay? I've been having some telephone equipment trouble, and I'm hoping by replacing it all that I've solved it. So just a quick
I can hear very clearly.
Good. Okay. I'm going to switch us over to sharing my screen, if this works. Yeah, this goes. So can people see the spreadsheet at this point?
Yes, I can.
Yep.
So can you see my gigantic mouse?
Yep.
In the middle?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. I can't see the Adobe Connect room at this point, so if somebody could keep an eye on the queue, that would be great. And I will churn along, and maybe, Craig, if you could keep an eye on the queue, and if somebody wants to talk, just interrupt me.
I sure will, and I should have noted, too, that just as the conference bridge is being recorded, so is the Adobe chat room. So to the extent that there are people talking in the chat room within Adobe, that's also being recorded. Just want to be upfront with folks about that.
Okay, now let me see if I can get that. Oh, I can get it back. Okay. I don't see the Adobe chat room chat part, however. So you might want to add that to the... There we go. That's lovely. And now the trick is, I think my screen just went away, right?
Yeah, it did.
Never mind. Go back to the way it was. We'll ignore chat for a while. All right. I want to walk you through a spreadsheet that hopefully you've all gotten. It got sent to the list a few days ago with mostly just lots and lots and lots of caveats.
Yeah, hold on one, Mikey. One moment, Mikey. I'm actually being Adobe challenged. Because I don't see your presentation now.
Yeah, I don't know if I can help you. Well, I'll tell you what. Oop, whatever's happening seems to be going in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm trying to get rid of... Why don't you try and...
I'm not sure that I have control of my television set. Ah, here we go. Now I'm going to share my screen again.
Yeah, unfortunately I'm not seeing the...
Try it again. How about now?
Yeah, I'm seeing only your display, which for the moment is fine. If folks have questions, just let's speak up on the phone line rather than the chat room.
Yeah,
how can I maximize the window?
No worries. Let's not get too hung up on this.
Thanks.
Because I'm going to be brief here. Mostly what I want to do is take you on a tour of the spreadsheet and lay out lots of caveats. As always, the good ideas in these spreadsheets belong to the other folks on the team, and the bad ideas are mine. So the way this is laid out is the first page, if you look down in the bottom in the file, there's a highlights tab. That's what we're on right now. And hopefully you can see my giant mouse pointing at it. You need to know that in addition to the totals, there's also a chunk that's broken out first by volume and costs. There's subscription-related costs for consumers and registries. And then there's transfer and storage-related costs for consumers and registries. So one of the things that we ran into is that this model is a little too tall, and so people weren't noticing that by the, per organization breakout is done. This is the first bunch of pages that are all laid out pretty much the same way. This is a three-dimensional model, so there's information that's driven by registries that's arrayed on this dimension. There's information by consumers arrayed on this dimension. And then, because there's a third dimension, stuff that's related to the aggregator is outside that box. So this convention is maintained for the rest of the pages on the model. And usually what's done is that we compare whatever it is on the page in this part in today's model as opposed to what it would look like if we went to some sort of aggregator model. So this particular page is calculating the number of subscriptions, and that convention intervention, what's being calculated is also carried forward for the rest of the pages. And anything in yellow, sickly yellow, is an assumption. So I want to throw a caveat in here that I'm the spreadsheet mechanic made up a bunch of assumptions, which being a guy, I had absolutely no problem making up things about which I have no knowledge whatsoever. So if the assumptions are wrong, by all means, pipe up on the net, on the list, or go ahead and plug new assumptions in. Anytime you change a number, let's say that we wanted to change the number of common net registries. Well, that's a bad example. Let's say that we wanted to change the number of large registries today from 3 to 5. Just changing that will echo all over the model. And I have no editorial pride about how good those assumptions are. I did try to get them right, but there may be an egregious error in here. One thing that came up on the list was when it came to the number of consumers, I sort of tripled them, figuring that there would be more later. But that assumption may or may not be correct, and that's certainly open to debate. And then the take rates, which are the assumptions here in the middle, are basically made up, I can't remember, I think John Levine, somebody sent the current number of subscribers by registry. And so what I did was make up take rates that would mimic that distribution. I didn't get it exactly right, but I got close. So all of those assumptions are open to challenge. And the other convention on all these pages is that I tried to document what our assumptions were and put a reminder over here that there's more to see. So this is the totals. And then on every page, I would then break out the numbers by the type of participant, first by consumers, then by providers. And then in each case, I compare the aggregator to the current situation through the convention of green and sickly brown. I'm not going through every page, but I wanted to spend a little time on the convention so that you kind of know how this works. From here, let me give you some sort of highlights that I think are interesting. On this page, what is going on is that by putting an entity in the middle between registries and consumers, not so much today because we don't have that many subscribers today. We only have, by this model, 3,300, which is higher than reality, but that's driven off of the assumptions. But as you can see, with all of the assumptions on this page, the number of subscriptions, which is pairwise relationships between subscriber and registry, tends to explode, and that's primarily because of the number of new registries that I'm hypothesizing, which is, again, a complete guess. And so this particular assumption especially is quite open to challenge. But if that turns out to be the case, then the number of pairwise relationships tends to explode. And that's consistent with the scaling problem that sort of drove this whole discussion. Whether it explodes this much, that's entirely open to discussion and change. But based on this particular group of wild assumptions, it does explode a lot. And also not surprising, but it's much smaller if we put an entity in the middle that takes out the scaling problem. So this is an unsurprising page, but proves that the model's working. The next page talks about subscription costs. And the controversial assumption on this page is documented over on the right side. And this is another complete crude guess on the part of your model mechanic. I basically tried to say that almost all of the subscription-related costs were the time it takes to touch a subscription and do things with it. So this is purely a labor hours times a rate kind of discussion, and all of those guesses leading up to a one-hour time are open to debate. Actually, those should be highlighted in yellow, and they're not. So I will, in the next page, or the next version, I'll highlight those. So what this is saying is that in each subscription, each end of the subscription, the subscriber and the provider have to spend an hour tinkering with each subscription. So basically, it's a doubling of one number. That's a huge simplifying assumption, but I decided that we weren't really doing a business plan. We were doing just a guesstimate to see whether there was value in proceeding with this and that this was a good enough guess, but we could certainly refine this a bit. And the upshot is when you take this $50 number and you multiply it by the number of subscriptions on the previous page, you have 3,300 subscriptions, times $50, you wind up with $166,000 total for the whole community of subscription-related costs today. And again, because the number of subscriptions explodes, so does the cost number. And same sort of logic over here. Because we don't have nearly as many subscriptions, especially in tomorrow's picture, we have a big difference between the cost of subscriptions today and the cost of subscriptions tomorrow. Again, then what's going on, those costs are then absorbed by consumers, and you can see that small consumers today don't spend very much money on subscriptions because they don't have very many. And that's, again, due to this previous paper we are extending down a pretty small take rate against a small number of registries, et cetera, et cetera. So that's sort of the next part of how this model works, is basically each page just builds a layer on the prior pages. So if you're wondering why a number looks goofy, it's good to sort of put your attention on a given part of the model and then work backwards, and usually you can see the arithmetic happening. Next is the number of transfers per year per subscription. And again, this is an assumption that says that small consumers don't necessarily transfer the zone file every day, whereas the assumption is that big consumers would, and another assumption is that so would the aggregator. So that's how those numbers are working. And then these are just boring numbers to make the arithmetic easy. Model. But when you do that, then you can multiply subscriptions times number of files per year and get the number of files delivered. And this gets us to our first toggle. One of the things that I was sort of tinkering with was the idea that maybe since the aggregator would have all the files that a subscriber would want, maybe instead of transferring every zone file every day to every subscriber, they could aggregate all those zone files into one file per subscriber. So if I'm a subscriber, instead of getting, I subscribe to 15 zones, instead of getting 15 files, I would only get one file. This is purely a Mikey tinkering thing, and it makes no difference to the cost model at all. It was just something that popped into my head, and so I toggle this. And you can, too, if you click on the cell over here, and you click on the other value, now what happens is that the number of files is roughly the same. It goes up ever so slightly because in the aggregator model, there's one additional set of transfers of all the zone files from the registry to the aggregator. That's why those two numbers aren't exactly this. But as I say, there's no particular cost impact to this. It's just sort of nice to know. Next page is another arithmetic page. No, actually it's not. There's an important pair of assumptions in here. One is the number of bytes per domain in the zone file is right now set at 5. I had it set at 100, and Vlad pointed out, you know, this is a good example of Mikey the Clueless making up a number that was really wrong. I simply didn't know how many bytes per domain there were, and Vlad pointed out that when you gzip them, they're really about 5 bytes per domain. And then a conversation that we had in the subgroup was, well, what's the effect on the size of the zone file if DNSSEC is turned on? And I didn't know. So this number is a complete guess as well. It's basically just doubling the original one, but some knowledge would benefit this assumption a lot. And again, here's a toggle that says, today there's no GNSSEC, but if you toggle it to GNSSEC, all of these numbers just doubled. And it's based on just which of these two numbers to use in the arithmetic. So that's an important thing to know, is that on each of these pages, sometimes there's a toggle that you get to play with. When you do that, then you get gigabytes per year, which is, again, similar arithmetic. And the presumption here, again, is just the arithmetic running through, and you get a lot of gigabytes per year in the current situation where it's pairwise, especially when you look at the at tomorrow's thing. Although, interestingly, it doesn't explode. This isn't the same sort of scaling problem. And the reason is because of the presumption on the size of the small registries, which drives this a lot. But it's quite a bit smaller when you look at the aggregator model, not unexpectedly. And then finally, now that we know the number of gigabytes per year, we can, just a quick thing about some of the toggles and assumptions here. The assumption on the ratio of differences versus full file is based on, I went off to registrar stats and I just grabbed 3 sort of representative registries and calculated the ratio. And that's what I used to base this assumption on. And then there's a toggle on this page as well that says we just ship a diffs file, it's probably quite a bit smaller than if we ship the full zone. And so you can see that if you do full zone files, now these numbers are just like in the last toggle. These numbers are now very close to each other. The aggregator doesn't really save any bytes per year. It actually increases it ever so slightly because you have to add in the transfer from the registry to the aggregator. So there's another one to play with. And just to make the numbers a little more interesting, I'll put it back to a diffs file. Now what happens is you multiply the bytes per year times prices, and for the costs, I just used Amazon's cloud costs as a surrogate, but we could certainly get more precise here. Out in the cloud, for a mere civilian like me, the best rate I can get is about bits per gigabyte transferred, and about the best rate I can get for storage is about about 5.5 cents per gig stored. And there's an assumption here that you can use to vary how long people keep the files around on their disk drive that influences this cost too. because what it does is it basically rolls these costs together for the consumer. And then the presumption is that a registry would only have the transfer costs because they'd already be storing the file. So anyway, that's how the arithmetic is arrived at here for the whole community right now. The annual costs aren't terribly big, but they get a lot smaller. So that's the tour of the model, and we could go lots further, but Craig, I think maybe it's time for me to be quiet and let people talk.
Well, I'd like to extend a thank you to Mikey and the folks on the subgroup that worked together to pull together all this information. I think it's really interesting and very useful for the discussion, and I would like to open up the floor to questions and comments folks have about either how the data was gathered or anything else for that matter.
Mike, this is Vladimir. Actually, this is not a question to Mikey, but probably to all the participants on the call. I'm still trying to get your assumptions right. And actually, I would like to question those that deal with the number, projected number of new TLDs, because they have a great influence on the overall numbers. So my question is, is anyone aware of any indication of what the number of new GTLDs is going to be? Has there been any discussions on the ICANN, any prior, any preliminary reports of interest or whatever? Because the number of 500 looks a bit kind of more than I expected.
I have a lot of this.
Go ahead, Craig.
So from an ICANN perspective, certainly there's been a lot of speculation, but there's absolutely no way to know what the numbers might be. Certainly if ICANN and the community decides to move forward on the EOI for new GTLDs, then we're certainly going to have a lot, many more data points than we do now. So to answer your question directly, Vlad, there's no way of knowing what these projected figures might be, and the EOI could help that. But that's not, that's not a done deal yet either.
Yes. Mary, may I get in the queue?
May I have another comment? We had there was a root scaling report at ICANN, so it was my impression that there were some limits to the number of new TLDs.
Why don't we go ahead and start a queue, because it sounds like there are lots of folks that want to chime up. I did hear Barry.
Yes.
And who else would like to get in the queue?
John Levine, Jonathan. Please.
John Levine.
After.
Jonathan. Okay, Barry, why don't you go ahead, and then we'll see if we can also get to Vladimir's questions.
Okay. Just in response to the number of GTLDs, I started kind of managing my own personal list of prospective TLDs coming up. It's a combination of various resources from applications back in 2000 all the way to what is publicly available on the Internet today. I think 500 is probably a decent number to use. The list that I've started now has a total of 345. And confidence ratings assigned to each one of those, is this like a surefire bet that we're going to see an application down to zero confidence that, this is a probability that we might see an application, but I haven't found an owner or anything. So that entire list has about 345. Of those 345, I'd say there's approximately 30 to 40% that have a very high confidence rating. So I think just in general, I would say that there's a lot of dot brands out there that I think would probably come up that we don't know about. So I just conclude that 500 is probably a fair number.
Barry, in the work that you did, of those potential 345 or maybe 500 is realistic, did you factor what element of that is IDNs, if any? Or are those purely ASCII TLDs?
I think you're on mute, Barry.
Barry?
I think we...
He's really on mute. He felt maybe his phone got hung up. I was... Kudos to Barry for doing that research. That's...
Yeah. Maybe, let me see if I can get over to... Let me see what happened to Barry's phone line. Yeah.
Okay, what...
Did he drop off?
Yeah, I'm having all sorts of technical issues on my end right now, so I can't even see if he's dropped off. So
shall we move on to the next in the queue and wait for Barry then?
Yeah. That was John.
Thanks. I mean, this is a great spreadsheet to start with, and I have basically two comments and suggestions. One is it would be useful if someone, and I don't know if Mikey has time for this, could do some sensitivity analysis, basically wiggle all the yellow boxes and figure out which ones are important and which ones aren't. So we can figure out, you know, sort of what are the parameters we actually have to be sure we understand. And the other thing is, depending on what model we eventually come up with, it might well be more useful to have the cost per registry than the cost overall. I mean, unless we actually go ahead with something that has a significantly expensive central point distributing all the data, I think the cost per registry is going to be more relevant to how practical it is.
This is Mikey. John, I agree on the sensitivity analysis. I'd be happy to do that. I wanted to run it by y'all before I did that because, as I say, I'm pretty far out there on the clueless scale, but I'd be happy to, if we think that this model is robust enough to stand it, then I'll go do a little sensitivity analysis and publish that next week.
Well, wiggle stuff and tell us what breaks, and we can help you fix it.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing is, I just scrolled down on every page. What I tried to do was break it out by provider because it is much more useful to see that. So what's on your screen now, just for example, is the transfer costs per provider per year, and see that. For small registries, you have to put some decimal places in there to actually be able to see the number because it's super small. And same in the highlights. If you go down to the costs by registry, you see that they're very small, and that in any registry, that the only people that seem to have a significant transfer cost per year is the .com net folks, and I'm sure that the assumption I'm using for transfer costs is way too high for them because they've got to be getting bandwidth super cheap. But I think part of the model seems to be the subscription related costs. And again, they're broken out on that front page down a little bit by consumer type and by registry type. And even small consumers, if they have to subscribe to a proportionately larger number of registries, 950 bucks a year is better than a sharp stick in the eye that buys a lot of beer. And so I just wanted to point out that, indeed, that's probably the most interesting part of the model, John, and I agree with you there.
So, Jonathan, I think you are next in the queue.
Oh, sorry, I was muted. Thank you. Well, I think Barry kind of covered some of it. I mean, I'm We've seen a number, a large number of interested applicants, but I'd say that 500 is probably pretty safe. Of course, the EOI, as you mentioned, Craig, will hopefully pull a lot of this out of the theoretical. But the what's more important is, I think, going back to the core focus of our group, is that I'm going through the process personally of signing up with each of the registries. And like Mikey, the number that you ran into where you said 1 hour, I think that might be optimistic, is what my experience has been so far. Just clerically, it takes a bit more time in establishing that. I'd almost double it.
Yeah, Jonathan, that was my thinking as well.
Yeah, well, it's bimodal. Some of them take 2 minutes, and some of them take days.
Amen, brother.
Yeah.
This is Mikey. One option we could do is build another little section that, right now, this set of assumptions keeps the costs the same for both provider and subscriber. We could split those. I just had no knowledge. I didn't know whether cost
well, the
subscriber also, or per provider also varied a lot. So I wouldn't want to double it based on consumer experiences if providers actually don't experience a whole lot of costs. And so it might be good to split these. Why don't I go ahead and do that?
If someone were to take the amount of time, which is kind of the exercise I was going through, although it's not proving to be practical to meter this, because what John said about 2 minutes or 2 weeks is proving to be the case, would be to just estimate, if I made X per hour and it was my job to get this all signed up, how many hours did it take ultimately, and you know, how long did it take? I think is another sort of thing we're not tracking, is in order to gain that access, how long did that take? And the, you know, it's easy to say that with, what, 20 GTLDs, I'm 2 weeks into the process, I've got access to two right now. So the thought I have here is, even if we double it, there's a clear savings immediately at whatever price.
Jonathan, I'll split the model so there's a provider and a consumer side, and I'll double if we just want to do a little sort of mini sensitivity analysis. Let's double it right here just for fun and see what it does to the costs.
Mikey, I appreciate what you're doing with the data. I think it's like proving gravity. We know it exists.
Yeah.
I don't want to discount all the work you're doing on this, but I'm pretty certain that it would be hard to disprove that the amount of time is greatly improved to simply go to a simple model.
No, I agree with you there. I think that what's interesting about a model like this is that impact on your costs when you start to add it together. So here's, if you view yourself as a small, well, if you're subscribing to all 20, then you're a large.
Well, I don't know about anybody else, but I make about $2 an hour. So
can you come work for me? I've got a lot of stuff that you could do. Anyway, let me drive some of that into the model so that people can see.
Hey, this is Rod. Can you hear me?
Hey, Rod.
Hey.
Hey, welcome back.
Yeah, I cleared my customs hell of the morning. Just a couple thoughts, Mikey. I was able to take a look at the model finally for a good bit on the plane ride back, and thank you again for all the work you've done. You get 99.99% of the credit, and as you said earlier, the blame too, but you've done a great job putting some stuff here. Couple of things on this topic around costs. Yeah, I think we should definitely have a different section for provider versus consumer. Providers, once they've done it, you know, a few times, are going to have a pretty good process. It's not going to vary a whole lot. With consumers, you end up having to learn a new, you know, way of doing things every time you set one up. And I would say there's even that one's kind of bimodal as well. You have a startup cost, which is usually pretty high. You've got to set up a new, not just get the agreements done, but you've got to set up your FTP access and all your processing and all that good stuff. And then get it going. And then and as far as just kind of ongoing maintenance, you know, you can go for years and not have anything happen, and then you renumber your IP addresses or something like that, and you're going to spend a day or something like that working on stuff. So those would be, that'd be good to kind of split that up. My other thought, though, is that we should come up with some more tweaks to the model, but not get too down the path of micro-modeling it, because we're really just looking for a ballpark in general. I think there's some stuff we can capture, though, between what we got and what we get into part of the path.
Rod, just to make sure that I captured it, I stuck a coping with changes line into the hourly assumption.
Right.
With that thought in mind, so we should change it to something that says it better.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, you know, we might want to just have a first year expense and subsequent year expenses, because they're dramatically different.
Okay.
What Jotham's going through right now to get set up, you know, a year from now he's not going to have to do that again. But if, you know, somebody, you know, once in a while, you know, somebody mysteriously drops you from there and you have to call them up and find out what's going on, track that down. Or, you know, I've had to renumber IP addresses a couple of times just because of network stuff. And, you know, we'll all assume IPv6 is going to come in a couple of years, so we'll all have to renumber, right? So, things like that happen, yeah. Things like that happen. That also
Vladimir. Comes
to the size of his own file, too, right?
hey, Rod and Vladimir, this is Craig. I need to step away from the phone and the computer for a minute or so. So I'm going to let you guys carry on. But I do think that when I get back, you know, the next couple of items on the agenda are related to provider costs. And we got yesterday some information from Neustar. And we'll see what we can collect from some of the other registries. We've asked, we just haven't gotten responses yet. But I do think we ought to talk about item agenda 2.5. You know, what material from the information that Mikey pulled together in the subgroup should appear in the concept paper. So if you guys want to toss that around for a few moments, I'll be back shortly.
Vladimir, I think we need to just come to some conclusions, right, as to, Mikey, when you were doing this calculation, so when you were compiling this spreadsheet, was there, do you think there's some main point here that we could highlight?
This is Mikey. What I do is pull the most interesting stuff up to the front page. It's pretty ugly, but I think that the main points that are made by the model, that's what I was trying to get on the front page. And so if someone were to say, what page should go into the report, this is probably the page I would suggest, or at least the starting point. It may be that we don't want all this stuff in the report. And if there's anything that people think should be on this page that's not, when you're digging around in the details of the model, clearly it's really easy to add that to this page. So what I was thinking, the reason that the total is so front and center, and I apologize for that, is just because that's the way the model's built. But I think the most interesting part of this page is the participant part, where we compare various things by various types of participants. And, you know, I always throw in a cost of delay that says, you know, what's it cost us to wait a week? And that's what this last column is all about. Because I think the call to action, especially to get transfer and storage costs, if in fact everything is as small as it is, that there isn't a very compelling case. I think we always have to treat CommonNet a little bit outside this because it's different. But, you know, $11 a week for our largest participant doesn't do much for me, whereas, you know, these kind of numbers, the subscription related numbers, do start to turn into something that are interesting. And this is all built based on a whole bunch of assumptions. And so I think the other thing we'd probably want to do is I start to pull the assumptions forward. And I think probably what it makes sense to do is do a better job of that so that people understand how we got to these numbers. So assumptions and these results would be what I'd suggest.
And this is Rod. I would suggest that we, now that we've got this out to the full list, we've already got some feedback here. Get some more feedback here in the next few days from other people on the list that can play around with it and add their expertise to it and get back and tighten up the model so we can have that to add to the paper, hopefully by next week. But get some discussion and more assumptions, et cetera, on the list right now so we can tighten this up.
Hey, guys, I'm back.
Okay.
So it sounds like we just kind of wrapped up item two on the agenda, the cost model discussion, and that there'll be further discussion on the list in order to augment what Mikey and the others have prepared for an additional discussion or a continued discussion next week if need be.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the NuSTAR numbers, but we're talking about the overall model. I think the NuSTAR numbers would be an input to that whole process, and it was good to get that. It was kind of real world costs and information. It was very valuable.
So does the group feel like we're ready to move on to item three on the agenda? We've got about 30 minutes left in the call. We've got 40 minutes dedicated to discussion of the concept paper. I think what I'd like to do is turn the floor over to Mark and his the PowerPoint he shared about the concept paper.
Craig, if you want to take Adobe back, I think that's the easiest way to get that up on people's screen.
Yeah, I'm going to try and do that right now.
Okay. Thanks. I just like Mikey, anything that's in the concept paper that is good is Rod's work or the group's work. Anything that's in the concept paper that is bad or a mistake is completely mine. That much said, what I thought I'd do is go through a very short presentation of what I put into this draft of the concept paper, where the holes are as far as I'm concerned, and there are several big ones, and then a slide to help us sort of focus the discussion in terms of how to move forward, how to get another draft out in short order. So if I could have the next slide, Craig, that'd be great. Thanks. The paper that you have, or you got yesterday or the day before, is completely based on Rod's paper. So the sort of foundation for it, as anyone who's looked through it, is really Rod's paper with all of the stuff we've done on the mailing list plus the calls. That's really what I've tried to do. The big changes, really the large changes, are in Section 7, that's the part that's really different from Rod's paper. Section 7, for those of you who don't have the paper in front of you, is really where we start talking about the alternative models for zone file access. And it's the section where I inserted the spreadsheet that we can come back to in a section a little bit later. That's section 7.2 on page 14. And also a brand new, something that's brand new to the paper, and that's advantages and disadvantages for each one of the models, and that's in section 7.3 on page 16. Someone on a previous call said that one of the things we needed to do was try to get a good, short, crisp description of each one of the models. And I took my best shot at that, and that's in section 7.1.3. That's on pages 11 and 12 for people who have printed copies. The idea there was to come up with a one- or two-paragraph sort of description of each one of the models, and that's there. Another thing that's added to Rod's draft are the consumer and provider experience stories. That's a little earlier in the section. I incorporated that into a section that Rod had called Issues in the Current System. Basically, what I wanted to do was incorporate the experience stories that people had shared into that sort of background section. So can I have the next slide, Craig?
Yeah.
So there's tons and tons of modest changes, and I won't go through them all. Obviously, the structural organization of the paper has changed a little from Rod's. There's several extra paragraphs in the background section in 4.0. There's also a section on why, not why so much, is the situation with CCTLDs. At the very front of the paper, there's the problem statement and solution space that I thought we had consensus on is actually just stuck in there. That's basically the first material that people see. Then I mentioned the experiences statement. There are lots and lots of other small editing that's actually in here as well. And at the very end, there's a couple things. I anonymized what I thought, something that I thought was actually useful, especially when we published this to a broader community so that people could see what a typical access agreement looked like. I tried to keep that anonymous anyway. People who have recently applied for access will know which one that is, but which one I used as a model, but actually it's intended as sort of an anonymous example. So there's lots and lots of small changes throughout the document, but the big structural ones are the ones I highlighted on the previous slide. So I'd go to the next one here, Craig. Thanks. Now there's lots left to be done. I think that's a fair thing to say. Obviously, there's no way to write an executive summary when you don't have the base of the document done, so that makes sense. Also, another thing that isn't done at all is I haven't incorporated any of the outstanding work that Mikey and the subgroup did on cost models. Obviously, we're going to have to decide what we do about a narrative for that, as well as what kind of documentation we put in. Obviously, we could put in as much or as little of that spreadsheet, the model, as we wanted to, but I think a narrative that sort of describes the underlying assumptions and what the basically what the results of those assumptions are is something that could go into section 7.4. And something I've just started scribbling on, again, this is for people who are not, when this gets published to a wider community in the ICANN community, is a small glossary at the back so that when people see acronyms or words that are very specific to registry operations, that they have a place to go to look up what they mean. So perhaps an end. Thank you. Wow. Nicely done. So the places where we really need help in this document to move it forward before Nairobi is that we have to have a discussion about advantages and disadvantages. And anyone who's had a chance to look at the document, you'll notice that I just got started there. That's by no means an exhaustive or complete list, and I even think some of the things I put in were kind of controversial. Also, in the previous section, that spreadsheet, the spreadsheet I have got in here is the last one that Vladimir posted to the list, plus I added the comments that I could figure out from the last phone call. So that's what's in section 7.2. And we really need to go through that one more time to make sure that everyone is happy with that. The elevator pitches, I was actually very struck two calls ago. Someone had actually said that one of the things that we really need is a good, succinct description of what each one of the models looked like. And, in fact, between phone calls, Craig and I had a conversation last Friday, and I tried to do an elevator pitch for him on the phone for the clearinghouse model, and Craig couldn't understand what I was talking about. So it's obvious that it's important for us to have a good description that each one of us sort of agrees to, or at least describes in pretty simple English terms what the model is supposed to do. And then finally, John Levine and a couple other people contributed user and provider stories, and those were very helpful in the beginning of the document. If there's more that we can add there, I think that would be a really good thing to do. It's a good description of the kinds of challenges that we have that go beyond simply scaling as a challenge. Okay. And if I could talk Craig into going to, thank you, sir. So here's what I'm hoping to do here in the next, though, if we do 15, 20 minutes, that would be good. First of all, I'd like some feedback on the overall organization of the paper. Specifically, am I missing stuff here? Are there things that ought to be added? One of the things that I took out that is not here that was in Rod's paper was that Rod's paper ended up with a conclusion section. And I don't know that we're to the point where we have a conclusion yet or a recommendation. And I don't know that a conclusion or a recommendation makes sense in the concept paper to start with. So I'm interested in some guidance there. Also, if people have comments about moving sections around or things that shouldn't be there, that would be really useful to have a little discussion about today. Also, again, in Section 7, in the front of Section 7 are the elevator pitches. It would be also really useful to have, if people have comments about whether or not the elevator pitches, the short two-paragraph descriptions are accurate. And then we also need to have some closure on the spreadsheet, which is on pages 14 and 15, that's Section 7.2, whether or not that spreadsheet is accurate. And then if I go to the next slide here, I'm almost done talking. And then I can shut up and listen.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying, Mark.
Okay, no worries. I see you have a twin that's online here. Okay, there we go. Also, something that's very, very helpful to me is the section after the spreadsheet, the sort of advantages and disadvantages of each one of the models, to start talking about what should be in each one of those 10 boxes. And then if people are going to help draft, here's what my goal is. Here's what I'd like to propose to the advisory group. That is that anything we can agree on to the call, I'll simply incorporate into the next draft. And then we as a group can contribute stuff to the mailing list, have discussions on the mailing list. And so my goal would be to have a redline version, a new version out before our call next week so that we have we're making incremental progress on getting this thing done before Nairobi. And really, my overall goal is to have a new version in your hands each week that really reflects the changes and the progress that we've made from week to week. So with that much said, maybe I could go back one slide, Craig, and open the floor to a discussion of the the overall structure of the paper. Does it seem reasonable to you? Is there stuff that I've missed before we take a couple minutes to start talking about specific content?
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Is anyone willing to comment on these points?
This is John Christoph. I'll make a quick comment, if I may.
Yeah, sure.
One of the things that, as I've noticed in a lot of the discussion so far, is not a whole lot of talk about researcher use of this data. Not that it necessarily this is maybe the focus of why this project is being undertaken, but perhaps saying something about researchers' use of this data, and that's what my use has been for, and just that to help support them and that their needs are being considered as well.
Okay, I'm very happy to include that.
This is Rob. That would probably be appropriate to put in the background section because, you know, we're doing it today, and it's just to extend that.
Mark, this is Vladimir. I think there are two items that are not covered, maybe I have missed them, I don't know. The first is the our discussion on the legal structure of this, for which we are awaiting the feedback from ICANN, from Dan Halloran. And the second thing is I think we need to discuss and provide some, at least some guidelines as to how the new system will be funded.
Okay, let me talk about those in turn. On the legal structure, I really had intended to add text once we had some feedback from general counsel. So I didn't put a placeholder there. And talking to Craig, I knew that there was a commitment to sort of have that discussion on next week's call. And then with that version, once that discussion took place, I'm perfectly happy to add that, perhaps in Section 7. Someplace else. So that was my intent there, and I'm sorry that wasn't clear. So you didn't miss anything. It wasn't there on purpose. Guidelines for funding of any option is something that I just haven't heard a lot of concrete talk about, and so I didn't. I'd be very happy to add it, but I'm not quite sure what to say about it.
And if I could add to the first remark that Mark made about the legal structure, I think Nacho Amadoz from .cat on last week's call made a good point, and that is, you know, once we decide the direction or the directions that we'd like to go, it's then a pretty easy task, I think, for the legal folks to craft the language that we need to support the model. I think what we're going to get from Dan Halloran and the ICANN General Counsel's office are some high-level thoughts on considerations that that need to be factored into what we're doing. We're certainly not going to get legal language, and legal language is something that will come, you know, after the models are chosen. So that was a comment that I wanted to make on legal structure. With regard to funding, yeah, I echo Mark's sentiments that there hasn't been a lot of discussion about that. With the exception of very early on when we were discussing the problem statement, we talked about the current no cost or very low cost if you include resources into the equation of getting the data. And when we look to some other potential model that sits outside of what we do now, there are certainly going to be some costs. And Given we've only got about 15 minutes left in today's call, and we're really focused on the structure of the concept paper, you know, I think it makes sense on next week's agenda to dedicate some time to the cost discussion.
This is Rob. I'd say let's get that started on the list.
Okay.
Ask me to throw out a straw man, perhaps. I know we had a few ideas that have been thrown around here and there. Well, I'm not going to volunteer today. If nobody does it by tomorrow, I'll probably throw something out there as a straw man. But I'm too jet-lagged to do something that would be coherent. But let's get that talk going on that. And definitely want to put something in there about options. We don't necessarily have to make a recommendation, but certainly bring up some options, because this is what this is about, is getting options out to people so they can discuss it, see what makes sense.
Mark, do you want to carry on with your...
Sure. Maybe what I'll do, Craig, is turn people's attention to the short elevator pitches. They really start at the bottom of page 11. And Yeah, if you can do that, that's cool. While Craig works on that, basically in that section, it starts on page 11. I sort of came up with a crazy name, and this is I'm a little like Mikey here. I just invent stuff when I can't find the right thing to do. So I said that taking the existing approach and enhancing it with standards, I called the enhanced bilateral model. And the description of that is on page 11 there, 7.1.1. So that's great, Craig. If I could sort of push you to page 11, that would be super. Yeah, so right there. So on your screen, right in the middle of the page there, 7.1.1 for the people who are on Adobe Connect, the intent of the enhanced bilateral model is to take the existing approach, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I called it, the enhanced bilateral model, and basically just gave a name to applying standardization protocols and standardization of output to the existing model. There's a single paragraph there in 7.1.1. You can decide, in fact, what I'd like is some feedback on whether or not I've described that very well. The other three, where we actually insert a third party into the zone file access schematic, are down a little bit on the page. And maybe, Craig, I could just have you go to the bottom of this page here. They really start in 7.1.3. where we talk about three separate models. And I kept the names that we've been using on the spreadsheet and the mailing list. There's the repository model, the proxy model, and the clearinghouse model. And, again, when Craig has a chance to sort of scroll down just a little bit, what you'll see, and if you're looking at page 11 and the top of page 12, are one or two paragraph descriptions of each one of those models. Now, those descriptions are sort of my editing of some text that Rod had created, along with some, and John had submitted some text as well. I basically took them and sort of adjusted them so that they were similar in tone and included them. So one of the things that I need some feedback for, and maybe the place to go for this is on the mailing list, is if people have concerns about that, the descriptions. Because I think those descriptions are what we're going to take to the general ICANN community to try to give sort of English-like descriptions of how the third-party zone file access models actually work. So I think if it's okay with you, Craig, what I'll do is I'll take that to the I should let the co-chairs decide here, but my proposal would be simply to take those to the mailing list and see if we get any comments. Let me move on then. The parts where I really could use a little discussion today are 7.2 and 7.3, and let me explain why having you guys take a careful look at these would be really helpful. In 7.2 is the comparison of the models. It's the spreadsheet that we worked on for a couple weeks starting in the third week of January. And I took the spreadsheet, the last spreadsheet that was published was Vladimir's. I took that spreadsheet and then added some comments that came out of the phone call from last week. And so that's how pages 14 and 15 came to be.
Yeah, guys, I apologize that I'm having connectivity issues, and I don't think anybody can see what you're talking about right now, Mark.
Okay, so I'm going to try to there you go.
Well, if you can see something, that's great. I can.
This is Mikey. I can control it, so there's 14.
Okay, so there's the first page. Thanks, Mikey. There's the first page of the model comparison. And just like Mikey, I used the sickly yellow across the top for my headers. And then I used colors in the spreadsheet to group them just in the same way that the Excel spreadsheet that was being passed around were grouped as well. I tried to be faithful to Vladimir's spreadsheet. And the only places where there are major changes on this particular page is in the bottom right-hand corner, where we talk about things like new transport alternatives from the zone file, things like diffs and BitTorrent and other kinds of alternative transport methodologies. So one of the things that would be helpful here is for the people on the call to actually take a look at this and to see if this really now reflects our full understanding of what the features of each one of the models are. I'm going to just keep talking a little bit. Mikey, can you go down to the next page? Outstanding. Thank you, sir. So this is the last part of the spreadsheet. It just didn't fit on one page the way I did it. And the idea here is this is really the spreadsheet that we as a group worked on for a couple weeks. What would be really helpful here is to get some closure on this comparison. So it's late in the call today, and maybe what I should do is stop here and see if people have any comments. Okay, then what I'm going to do, to be honest, is I'm going to push that out to the list as well and try to encourage some comments or try to get some closure. I mean, maybe one of the ways I'll say that is that on pages 14 and 15 of the spreadsheet, as I understood it, and see if we get some closure on that comparison. Then the next thing would be...
Mark, this is Rod. I was going to make a suggestion here. Sorry for the background noise. You've identified several sections of the paper that you want to get help with, and comments from the group, et cetera. What I think would be good to do would be to create a separate thread topic for each one of those, and let's get the list working on those. So those who have comments on one thing can jump in on that and drill in on those. So we can drive them forward individually instead of having like one big comment on paper thing. I think we can, if we concentrate on one task at a time in front of us, we'll probably not knock them out pretty quick. Just a suggestion.
Yeah, if the group is fine with that, that's great with me. Well, let me, Mikey, if you could go down one page, that would be helpful. Then if I use Rod's suggestion, here's one of the things that I'm going to start us out on is this particular page, is that it's a description of the advantages and disadvantages of each one of the models. And I was so insecure about this that I used the smallest font I could possibly find on my computer. No, it's just a joke. what I was thinking originally was that I would be putting a lot of text into each one of these boxes. Using Rod's suggestion of using the list, I think I'm going to actually push this one out to the list almost immediately after the call as a way to start getting some feedback on it. Advantages and disadvantages, I think, will prove to be something where we need to have some focused discussion at some time when we're on a call. But it's certainly amenable to Rod's suggestion of doing some of the discussion on the list. So hearing one of the things that strikes me here is hearing no conversation. One of the things that strikes me is that some people, this is new to them. They haven't had much of a chance to look at the document. That's fine. I understand that. I think what I'm going to do, if it's okay with the group, is use Rod's suggestion of dividing up the tasks into smaller chunks, pushing those to the list and trying to get comments going on the list. And if that's okay with the group, Craig, maybe I will hand it back to you for item 4, the agenda.
This is Rod. Just one last point. I think that approach will work great. Vladimir brought up a couple of things that we're missing, and that'll be, if we've got anything, anybody else has anything else that's missing or some basic fundamental flaws or issues with the structure, let's get those out now so we can make sure that we're just concentrating on knocking off the little points going forward here.
It's Vladimir. Also, let me just remind you that we only have two calls left until we need to finalize the draft concept paper. So, and in the light of this, and as we didn't have any further suggestions to other potential models, shall we consider these four models to be the final lists for the concept paper? Does anyone have any serious suggestions on this? Okay, then. So the way we are moving forward, I believe, is that by next call, Mark will be preparing the next draft based on the discussion we're going to have on the list. And we shall discuss it again on the next call with a view to have the final draft in 2 weeks. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, I think that works fine. And what I'll do is maybe I'll contact Mikey offline about working on some narrative, some text around the cost model.
It works.
Okay, then. So any other comments on this? Okay, so we are moving to the top of the hour, and we have item 4 on our agenda, which is the plans for the Nairobi workshop. And Craig, would you like to take the microphone?
Sure, and I think we actually discussed this a little bit at the onset of the call as one of the open action items. I know, Rod, you weren't with us at that time. But what we are looking to do is schedule a 90-minute working session in Nairobi. I could see that you know, we would spend time talking about, you know, how the group came to be, who's on the group, what the group is trying to do, and then get into a presentation of highlights from the concept paper, you know, specifically as it relates to the models that are being discussed. And so the Nairobi session would be a working session of this advisory group, but also would be open to the public and have a comment section, you know, dedicated to our time together. As I requested in the beginning of the call, if folks are going to be in Nairobi, if you can let me know, that would be great. That way we'll have some sense of, you know, who will be with us and who we need to make accommodations for with remote participation. And as we talked about in, you know, at the onset of this group, one of the milestones is for us to present the concept paper for discussion, to have it publicly posted prior to Nairobi, but then to have discussion about it while we're in Nairobi. So I think we're well on our way. You know, Mikey's work and Rod's concept paper and the good job that Mark has done compiling all that into, you know, where we are with this new version. I realize we've got a couple of calls left, and as I said, I think we're well on our way to meeting our commitment of having a concept paper posted and ready for discussion in Nairobi. You know, what happens after that is what we'll need to determine based upon the comment and the ongoing work of this group. So I don't think that there's much else to say about Nairobi, other than I'm certainly open to comments or feedback or suggestions that anybody might want to voice up on the phone now or certainly on the list. Well, hearing no further comments, Rod or Vladimir as co-chairs, did you want to close with any remarks, or are you both set for now?
Well,
go ahead.
Rod?
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah,
Vladimir, did you want to add?
Yeah, so I don't have any other remarks. So I would encourage all the participants to read the documents that were presented today and to provide feedback on the list so that we can move towards our goal here. So, and with that, I would like to thank everyone for their participation in the call, and talk to you next week.
I'd just like to add thanks to Mark and Mikey for all the hard work. It's great stuff, guys.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. Thanks.
Great job. Thanks, Craig.
Thanks.
Hey, guys.
Thanks. Good job. Bye.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.